Martin is the award-winning author of 10 novels. His first Peter Fallon novel, 1979's Back Bay, established him as a master storyteller. Four more books in the series have followed, including The Lincolnlander, his new title, and the subject of our talk today. Pulitzer Prize winner and noted Lincoln scholar Doris Kearns Goodwin said about the book, "What an irresistible combination, a sparkling mystery, intriguing characters, and lively history. I am a huge William Martin fan, but The Lincolnlander is my absolute favorite." Martin is known for following the lives of the great and the anonymous in American history and has taken readers from the Pilgrims to 9/11. It's a pleasure to speak with him today. Welcome, William. Thanks so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thank you for having me.
The Lincolnlander is set in the present day and during the Civil War. What was it like to juxtapose the two stories?
Well, I've written several novels like this where we go back and forth in time between similar locations. Washington today is sleek, bright, brilliant, at least the parts of the city that we tend to think about. The Washington of 1862 was dirty, muddy, filthy, filled with backstabbers, rapscallions, thieves, politically ambitious operators of every sort. And in a way, that makes it sound a lot like today.
Yes, it does. The book deals with President Lincoln's private diary as it goes missing. Give us a glimpse into the twists and turns of that storyline.
Well, this is a novel about a diary that Lincoln is writing when he's in the telegraph office, waiting for bad news, which is what he would do most nights. He'd wander over to the telegraph office and sit down. And in the book, he has a diary, and he's leaving his ruminations upon the need for emancipation, the potential consequences of emancipation. And one night, he leaves the diary on the desk in the telegraph office, and a young lieutenant picks it up, puts it into his pocket, saying, "I'll get that back to the president tomorrow." That's a bad decision. But in storytelling, bad decisions make great stories. And what we do then is use the diary as a vehicle that carries us through the Civil War. Who gets it? Who wants it? What are they going to try to get out of it? And of course, in the modern story, which just adds resonance to the history, there is a group of characters looking for it today. Where is it today? What would it be worth? It would be invaluable. A Lincoln diary? Imagine. I remember when I was first getting the book off the ground, I chatted with Doris Kearns Goodwin a little bit. We've known each other for years. I said, "How about a Lincoln diary?" And she almost levitated from the chair. "Can you imagine what that would be worth? Can you imagine what it would give us as students of history?" And then she went on to talk about Lincoln wandering the hallways of the White House at night, unburdening himself to no one. What if he was unburdening himself in a diary?
So there isn't actually any evidence or hint that there might have been an actual diary?
No, there's no actual real diary. Lincoln, we know, wrote little notes to himself on the backs of envelopes and things like that. His valet, William Slade, admitted to burning enormous numbers of things like that throughout the course of Lincoln's presidency. So that's sort of a historical precedent. And then, of course, Lincoln himself kept a scrapbook of his speeches during the 1858 campaign, which you can actually see at the Documents Gallery at the American History Museum at the Smithsonian. And on the front of it, he has written, as if it were a diary, "This volume contains all my thoughts on the matter of slavery." He wrote it in pencil, 1858, and gave it to a campaign supporter.
Wow. The Lincoln era scenes are so evocative. How much time did you spend researching those?
Well, I did a lot of reading, as I always do. I start my research a mile wide and an inch deep, reading the generalized texts, and then I start boring holes down into it. I start reading primary sources, Walt Whitman's memoranda during the war. I read the Washington Daily Republican for most of 1865. That was the newspaper. Not just to find out the war news, which isn't particularly well described, but the daily operations of how a city works and how people go about things. Read the ads. I can tell you how much a bowl of she crab soup cost at the Gosling restaurant on Pennsylvania Avenue. And I can also tell you that Miss Laura Keene is appearing at Ford's Theater on the week of April 11th to April 15th. Closes Friday night. Yes, it did. you know, that all comes from the advertising. And in a way, you get this great chill when you read things like that, because you have this great sense of historical dramatic irony as you look back and say, I know what really happened. But my job as a novelist is to take you back to that place before the history becomes history, and you don't know that it's about to become the history.
And you do an amazing job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The political lobbyists portrayed in the present day portion of the book are odious. I'm guessing you knew your share of these folks to write about them accurately.
Well, it isn't so much that I hang out with a lot of lobbyists as it is that I am bothered by the power of lobbies, which means the power of sort of unfettered financial support pouring into these lobbyists. I am bothered by how that affects our political process, how so much of it is driven by the people with the money who hire people for a lot of money, who then have connections with the politicians. And yet, the theme of the book, one of the themes of the book, is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because Civil War Washington, the lobby of the Willard Hotel, is filled with politicians. It's filled with opportunists. It's filled with people who wander from corner to corner, hiding behind newspapers, listening, hoping that they can pick up a little bit of information or maybe advance their cause. And it's from the lobby of the Willard Hotel that we get the term lobbyist.
I recently watched an interview with author historian David McCullough. When asked, he said Washington was our finest president. Who would you pick and why?
Well, I know that he's always felt that way. I got to know him when I was doing an episode of The American Experience on the life of Washington about 20 years ago on PBS. And he said, you know, Bill, you ought to write a novel about Washington someday. And so I did. And part of the research of writing it was to see what other people said about him. And Lincoln said of Washington, Washington is the star that outshines us all. Lincoln understood the challenges that Washington had to face in establishing a presidency, what it meant, how it would operate, and so forth. In a greater way, George Washington is the keystone of American independence. If you take out any of the others, including John Adams or Thomas Jefferson, out of that arch that stretches from 1775 to, say, 1800, the arch won't collapse. You'll pretty much get the American democracy that you got. But if you take Washington out, it'll all just fall apart because of so many of the things that Washington did, so many of the precedents he established. That being said, I think Lincoln was the greater president because of the inconceivable enormity of what he had to lead this country through.
Have you ever thought about what Reconstruction would have been like had Lincoln not been assassinated?
Yeah, I think so. I think things might have gone a little bit more smoothly. I think that the country might look a little different now. But as I always say, 19th century America would have looked different had Lincoln lived. But imagine how different it would have looked had he never lived. I think we would have by now seen two countries, maybe three or four on this continent. And who knows how they would all interrelate.
Have you seen the new Daniel Day-Lewis Lincoln movie, and what are your thoughts?
You know, I was so impressed by his performance that I don't think that anybody's ever going to be able to think of Abraham Lincoln again without somewhere hearing the sound of Daniel Day-Lewis's voice and seeing him slouching along through the role, because I think physically he really captured Lincoln.
Are you already working on a new project?
Yes, I'm working on several new projects, and when I've decided which one is the best one to pursue and I finish writing it, you'll be the first to know.
Okay.
Anyone who's interested in reading more about my books or learning a little bit more about what I'm up to can visit my website, www.williammartinbooks.com.
Well, readers, I have to tell you, this one, The Lincoln Letter, was a wonderful book, a real page-turner. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.